put on our PJs, build a blanket fort. Let's go inside, get cozy, comfortable. It's not a coincidence, it's a metaphor about how we come together and build our world. And when the convo ends, we break it down and begin again. Yeah. Sit down, tune in, crank it. It's time to bring your own blanket. Blanket Ninjas.
Welcome to season 3 of BYO Blanket, a yoga podcast where we get cozy, discuss interesting topics to uplift, inspire, and contribute, all inside a blanket fort. Before we start, let's go over to Junon for a quick message. Junon?
Thanks, Maria. Listener, I'm talking to you today. I know you're about to hit the fast forward 15 seconds button until you get to the content, but if you could just hold off for a second and listen to this, go to Patreon. Go to patreon.com/BYOblanket and please become a patron of the show so that we can continue putting out episodes for you and giving our current patrons their BYO Blanket swag. If you become a patron, you get swag. End of story. Patreon.com/BYOblanket. We love you. Mwah. Bye.
You forgot to mention the bonus content that we've got for patrons only.
Gosh, okay. If you're a patron, you also get bonus content. That is episodes that you cannot access unless you are a patron. You can pay as little as a dollar a month, and then you have access to all of that. Okay, love you. Bye. Mwah. Back to you, Maria.
Thank you, Junon. And welcome, you guys. This is episode... Six or seven-ish?
I don't know. We've just done a lot.
I know. We've done more for obvious reasons. And so excited for our episode today. We've got two amazing Boomerang Master Ninjas. We've upgraded their titles.
Boomerangs come back.
They do. It's science.
That's why they're... I've never actually thrown a boomerang. I'm sure that they work. I'm so excited for these guests. Right before we started the episode, I got really starstruck realizing that I have these two women on at the same time, and they're people that I look up to and teachers that I follow, not religiously, spiritually. They've taught me so much, and now they're on the show together, y'all.
Together.
Say hello to Sarah Montross and Giaconda Parker.
Woo!
Hi.
Hi. Hello.
They're zooming in, too, because we are... still on lockdown here in the United States of America or the entire world.
Probably the entire world.
And it's actually pretty neat because Giaconda, you're in Austin, right?
I am. Austin, Texas.
Thank you guys so much for being here. And Sarah, Giaconda, for people who don't know you, will you introduce yourselves in whatever way you think is engaging / introductory?
So I'm Sarah Montross. I teach what would be called form or alignment-based yoga at Big Power Yoga. I also guest star teaching powerful flow. I teach a little bit of flow myself, power vinyasa flow. And I study a lot with Iyengar teachers and somebody named Christina Sell, who is a maven of the form discipline of teaching of yoga.
Oh, yes. A real maven, eh? I like that word. Well, thanks, Sarah.
That's a good word.
I know, that was so good. So my name's Giaconda Parker, and I teach alignment-informed flow style practice in Austin, Texas, and around the country. I lead a lot of teacher trainings and retreats, and in fact, I have had the good fortune of leading 1.5 retreats with Sarah to India.
Oh yeah!
Tell us about the half. For the listeners who don't know the inside joke that we are all laughing at, tell them why half.
What happened? Just curious.
Sarah, would you like to tell our tale?
Well, I'll make it short, but essentially, Janan was on this trip to India with us.
Weekend getaway.
Yeah, we can get away to India, we like to call it. Gia and I flew on March 10th, and I think Janan probably flew a day or two later. And we were in India for approximately 5 whole days before we had to turn around and fly home due to developments with the COVID-19 world pandemic. So
it was pretty nuts.
It was a quick in and out, our little weekend trip to India. I'd like to add, but because Giaconda said it, I do also... lead the 300-hour advanced teacher training at Big Power Yoga.
Ah, yes.
And Gia Conda is one of our core faculty. So Gia, Nancy Perry, and I are the core faculty in that program. So you get a real, really nice dose of both the flow aspects and the more form aspects of the yoga discipline. And if you don't know what that means, we're about to fill you in on what it means.
So, yay. First of all, 10 out of 10 would recommend, if you're a teacher,
the big 300 upgrade.
Hour, do it.
The big, the big upgrade.
It's big, and it's an upgrade, so hello. Also, do you guys want to introduce, we've already mentioned it. We've already alluded to it quite a bit. Do you guys want to introduce our topic for this episode?
Yeah, so our topic for this episode is the flow and form aspects of the practice and how, as Gia has eloquently put it, how those are on a continuum. So that there are classes that are more alignment-based classes. We could call those the form classes. There are classes that are more flow-based classes. And then there are classes that mix elements of the two. And we thought we'd have a little discussion about that today. Mm.
I identify a little bit more as form. I'm sorry, flow. So I'm on team Gia Conda flow.
Hashtag team Sarah form.
Well, flow is much more fun. So.
I don't know, man. I have a blast in your form classes. You see my face during those classes? Yes. It's quite expressive.
Of course, your face is like that also in flow classes, didn't it?
True. Thank you, a wise teacher.
So you know.
Yeah, it's just kind of your face, Janon, really.
What? Adorable and amazing? Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Absolutely.
So cute. Well,
we do have a funny story, actually, to tell about how, like, an example of flow teacher versus form teacher approach to things. So the last time we were in India together, when we had a full full-length trip, we were on a boat, and Sarah and I were, we got to take the helm of this big boat, big houseboat that everybody was on in Kerala. And so I was the first one to take the wheel, and basically the guy was like, go that way. And so I'm just kind of meandering in that general way. And
also chatting,
turning around, having conversation, getting my photo taken, you know, lots of little pieces that were just in the flow of the moment. And then every once in a while, the captain would just sort of nudge me and be like, a little more that way. So we were aiming in a direction, but meandering. And then Sarah took the wheel. You want to tell yourself your part? So it's great. So Sarah takes the wheel, and he's sitting there, and she looks back at him. She's like, okay, so we're aiming right there or right there. And what you can't see is I am gesturing with a blade of a hand, like aiming towards one specific destination. And then she was just very focused on that straight route. And Amara, who was with us, was like cracking up. She was like, oh my God, the flow teacher and the form teacher driving the boat.
Flow did sound a little more fun in that story. Sorry, Sarah.
Oh,
I found it extraneous movement, Gia. Like, let's just do the stuff we need to do.
Exactly. And I would also say that fun would depend on your tendency towards seasickness upstairs, the people who were eating lunch.
True. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's got a real Shiva Shakti vibe to it, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Real sun and moon. Real opposite of something else. Something else.
Something else. Something else.
Masculine, feminine. Maybe? All the things? Yin and yang?
I mean, that's one way you could...
More catchphrases in there?
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
So tell us, guys, you're in the flow and the form. What would you love our listeners to know and to learn about?
Hmm.
Hmm.
Well, I could start with, you know, when in the flow style of practice, one of the ways that we aim to get to a quiet place inside is to enter the state of flow. So that means being so absorbed in what you're doing that the vrittis, as they're referred to in the sutras, that the fluctuations of the mind settle because this state of flow arises. Mm. And there's a single pointed focus on exactly what's at hand. And so I would say that is the technology that a flow style of practice works with to aim at, you know, what yoga is, which is the stilling or the calming or a shelter from the fluctuations of the mind so that we arrive in what the next sutra says, which is our natural state of being. So that would be the thing I would put forward to say that that's flow-based technology in sort of getting to that state of yoga.
That's such an excellent way of putting flow. And I would say that we have a similar approach to that same end point in form. Based practice, which if you haven't heard the term form-based practice, sometimes it's called alignment-based practice. We could look at the Iyengar tradition and methodology as like really the sort of bastion of the alignment-based practice, I would say. And then we have sort of offshoots of that. And I study a lot in the Iyengar method and with Iyengar-inspired teachers, but then bring in elements of flow into my form-based classes. And in those classes, I am also looking to move students towards that state of a quieter mind that the yoga sutras promise, as well as other, of course, other traditions and other texts. But, and I am using the structure and technology, as Gia says, of alignment and placement of the body specifically in particular ways to begin to get the mind focused on that. And then by focusing on that, all else falls away. Mm. That's really that's what I would say would be the technology of the form class. And if they sound very similar when we put it like that, I think.
Yeah, really, they do.
That, I think it's cool because you can't, like, you can't have form without flow, and you can't have flow without form. Mm-mm. Because they both coexist. You're just focusing on separate aspects of that sequence. Or
I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that yin and yang symbol that has the dot of each color on the opposite side, with the yin always needs a little bit of yang, and yang always needs a little bit of yin. I think that goes well with flow and form as well.
I think that's right, and I think that especially now, in I spoke about the Iyengar method being the really the standard bearer of the alignment based practice. Mm-hmm. Now that that methodology has somebody new at its helm, so the current leader of that method is Abhijata Iyengar, who is BKS Iyengar's granddaughter. Mm-hmm. One thing I experienced when studying with her in Dallas last year was that she was bringing in a lot more of the flow elements to the practice that were always there, but had fallen away a little bit. If you look at old videos of BKS Iyengar, he's flowing in and out of arm balances and including the sun salutations and making the poses linked together in the way that we associate with what Gia is talking about, more of a flow-based class. So those elements are coming back into the Iyengar method. It is still very much an alignment-based practice, and they're very focused on particular placement of the body in order to find extension and expansion, and thus find get access to the infinite space within. Right, that is really that's the end point of the Iyengar method and the alignment-based method, I would venture to say. But we are seeing, yes, exactly what you said, more of the flow coming in to because it's, I think it's necessary in certain places. And it's also necessary for certain temperaments and stages of life, times of the year, times of the day. So we could go on and on ad nauseum really about that, about planning your own yoga practice based on all those different things. Mm-hmm. Gia, do you want to talk a little bit about how your experience with different types of people and their temperaments, both maybe from an Ayurvedic perspective, but also from like a time of life, and if you have any observations on flow versus form?
Well, yeah, actually, Sarah, I was thinking about this because in your introduction, you talked about your root teachers, and I was reflecting on mine. And when I started yoga, two of my root teachers, one was an alignment-based teacher, Rodney Yee, who came up in the Iyengar tradition and then left to go on and create his own alignment-based style of yoga. And then Shiva Ray, who really was she's a student of Patabi Joyce and a student of the Ashtanga tradition. But she broke away from that and added music and was also a studier of world dance. And so Shiva brought in this idea that we could choreograph unique practices to fit, you know, the day. And that's not unique actually to flow, because also in the form styles, there are different different practices that are recommended at different times of day or different times of year or different phases of life. Mm-hmm. And so this adaptability of yoga is universal to both styles. But however, I would say the reason I resonated with both of those teachers is because they both taught to the energetic body. And I think a lot of people who are attracted to flow styles of practice talk about being in the energy of yoga, or they talk about being in the Sanskrit word for it is the bhava or bhavana, like the mood of practice. And I think that is in many ways the temperament, maybe a little less based on sort of the Ayurvedic doshas and a little more related to really which kosha you reside in the most. When we talk about the koshas, there's the physical body, both of them are physical practices, but then there's the energy body. And I think that a lot of times the people who are attracted to a flow style of practice, they want to feel the practice in a certain way. Whereas in my, in my experience and my observation, a lot of people who are more attracted to the form style of practice, they have, they're real smart. I mean, they have a very strong, strong mind. And they have this capacity to follow a point from beginning, middle, and end. Whereas I am kind of a circular talker, I'm a circular thinker, and I'm very, very sensitive to the mood of a room, the mood of a conversation, the mood of a place. And I'd be curious your thoughts on that, Sarah. Whereas like people with a very strong manomaya kosha, like it's like a strong mind that can follow really a clear point from beginning to middle to end. I think that's my observation.
I really don't have much to add to that. I think that's brilliant and very astute. I've never thought about it that way. Maybe me not neither. That specifically related to the, I tend to go a little bit like out of the room when people start talking about energy body and things. Like, I'd be like, okay, what's this woo woo? You know, I, not that I don't relate. Part of me loves it. You know, like there's part of me that's like, ooh, that sounds romantic. And then I'm like, anyway, so where's my back foot? You know, so I,
yeah.
So I, that feels right to me, Gia, what you said in my energy body.
Is the energy body the pranamaya kosha? Is that okay? Cool. Just wanted to be sure I was on the same page mentally as you guys.
And that's also where the emotions, right? The emotions are some part of the energy body. So
really, it's not part of the manomaya.
What is it?
It the emotions, like chemical.
No, I think they're energy, aren't they, Gia? Pranamaya.
Yeah. Emotions are more, well, it's a combination, really. Like when you talk about emotions, you have the felt experience that then gets connected in the mind to a particular mood.
It's like chemicals then get connected to neurological activity. Because emotions are not neurons.
You know, we have a feeling, like, and feelings, we tend to use those words, feelings and emotions, interchangeably, but they're not really interchangeable. The feeling is the felt experience in your body. Mm. Like a feeling of anger for me is like heat behind my eyes, literally, is what it feels like when I'm really angry.
Spicy.
So that's
eyes.
The feeling of anger. But when I have that feeling, then I associate that with the emotion of anger. And then once I take that to the story of why I'm angry, then we have the whole thing happening. Mm. And so that's why I would say that the felt experience is a little more in the energetic body. And then the emotion is in the mind.
Yeah. Mm. Cool. Will you just teach that's me things all day forever? Yeah. Well, I guess you are in the upgrade. I just wanted to say it. I signed up for it. So
yay. Okay. Yeah.
You know what also I was just considering is this sort of like dichotomy, you know, of flow or form, whether you're flow or form, you know, it really goes back to those roots of BKS Iyengar, who was a student of Krishnamacharya, and then Sri K. Pattabhi Joyce, who was a student of Krishnamacharya. And in some ways it shows the brilliance of that original root teacher, that he had sort of two very different students who came to him from very different situations and gave them different practices.
That is, based on their temperament and what they needed.
Exactly.
Right? I think Iyengar was a very sickly young boy, right? And needed a very different practice than the very healthy young Pattabhi Joyce, right?
Yeah. Hey, I'm curious, just on a personal note, what would you categorize Baptiste Power Yoga as? Because that's the one I primarily practice and teach nowadays.
I would categorize that personally as a flow practice. Because it is rooted in I would say it's the most similar now to the form of like a, not similar, but if we had to relate it to one or the other, I would say that Ashtanga Vinyasa, it really, with all the sun salutations and moving with the breath, and like the real focus in Baptiste Yoga is moving with the breath, less about the form, right? Like, in fact, I would say that if we talk too much about form in a Baptiste Yoga class, we take the mood of the Baptiste Yoga class out.
Yes.
The Baptiste mood.
Very different than a... You know, when I go to the week-long trainings and we like break down a pose, that's also Baptiste Yoga, but it's not the kind that we teach in the classrooms. That's called Baptiste Power Vinyasa for sure.
I think the trainings we get the form.
Right, and I would say that kind of, you know, touches back on this idea that we're always leaning on the other one. You know, in a certain way. I mean, I lean very heavily on my alignment training when I'm teaching a flow class or when I'm taking a flow class, because it's like the times when I, and it's been good for me, if it's good for my temperament sometimes, to follow those straight lines, those direct, clear instructions, to feel just my body and not so much all the other things that are happening in the room in a flow situation. So, and I do find, like I'm finding right now, you know, when it feels like our whole world is turned upside down, that I really need my flow practices when I'm feeling really anxious. And I really need my form-based practices to set me up for meditation. And so I'm kind of practicing twice a day, trying to stay sane. And I do notice in my flow-based practices, I feel more spacious and kind of open and ready for what's next. And I find after my form-based practices that my mind is quiet and I am in the right space for pranayama and meditation.
Wow.
That's really interesting.
You know, I'm really finding the same, Gia. I'm either practicing twice a day right now, or I'm doing my Peloton bike and then forward bends. Like, that's it. It's like my quiet practice has become really about 6 forward bends and inversions and then Shavasana right now. Because that's what I'm finding I'm craving is the inner quiet that comes from that kind of practice right now. And I also have to get out this energy from being in my house all day. So it might be a flow class, or it might be getting on the bike and, you know, sweating a lot.
Yeah, I've started jogging way more than normal. And outside. Normally when I used to jog, it actually was with a lot of form on a treadmill for a very specific amount of time for a very specific speed. And now that I am home almost 24/7, it's like, hold up, there is a pug on the video. I know, listeners, that you absolutely cannot appreciate looking at Sarah Montross's pug, the form teacher's pug. But here he is.
Mo likes form yoga.
He's a
like
form.
His mommy.
Really? Oh, he's so cute. He looks so flowy. He's got literally his skin folds. Cute. And then Gia's holding a stuffed animal.
Is it a
stuffed
wolf? A wolf? Oh.
We are not about to. Like, both of our cats are here and they're both sleeping. So we're going to do a Ahimsa and not wake them up just to say hello to you guys.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I've learned so much so far. I just want to say.
Yeah.
You guys are incredible teachers.
I know.
What else would you guys like to impart to someone listening?
I'd like to reiterate what I touched upon based on something Gia said earlier, which is that this is really a continuum. And I think that the best of both of these methods comes from not being rigid about what it is, and rather bringing in all the tools of yoga based on what the goal is and what makes sense for that day or for that population or for what you're trying to get across. And as Gia said, she is an alignment informed flow teacher. And that's what makes her classes so genius to me, is that everything is very intentional. And although she told the fun story about sort of meandering along the way to the point on the boat in Kerala, everything is a very specific meander in my experience in her classes. Right?
Chaos.
It's not just like a random meander.
Yeah.
And I find that, like, even this morning I taught, and I taught a backbending class this morning, and I really myself have found that right now when I work on backbends, I'm bringing in a little more flow, because you can do like the really hard ass, like, let's go after it backbending class. And sometimes I'm just not interested. And I really just want to get there a little more sweetly. And so I know that I'm bringing a little more sweetness and kindness into my classes right now, because I think that's what my body needs. And so probably everybody else's body needs. So all of that to say, I think that when we pull on all the tools available to us as yoga teachers in an intelligent way and know why we're doing it, that's when everything is the most successful, whether regardless of what kind of teacher you quote label yourself as.
Mm. No, I know you mentioned earlier that it depends on what kosha someone's residing in, where they might find, for lack of a better word, more success in what they're doing. In speaking of Ayurveda and the doshas, for listeners who know that, if you don't know it, Google it. It's pretty easy to Google. What would you say in terms of Ayurveda and the doshas and knowing someone's constitution, will that have an effect on whether they have more success in flow or form or both, or does it matter, or what do you guys think?
Well, I can take that question. One, with the koshas, you know, we all have all those layers, and then some of us, I just think we end up spending more time in one or the other. But you know, somebody who uses their mind can also certainly feel prana and energetic flows and all of that. that's just indicating some tendencies. And then if you want to look at the doshas from an Ayurvedic point of view, someone with a Vata dosha is made up of air and ether. So they are going to be smaller boned generally, and their joints will be more delicate. And their mind tends to be a little more, like can go lots of places. It moves like the wind. And when you start looking at these different Ayurvedic elements, then you could say, for instance, a Vata type person would do better with a set sequence, and they would do better with a sequence that doesn't have a lot of jumping around because they do have delicate joints. Somebody with a Pitta dosha who's very fiery isn't recommended to do like super hot heated practices. However, they're fiery people. And so they often tend to find them in these fiery practices. But from an Ayurvedic perspective, somebody who is that fire constitution, they tend to be pretty disciplined. They tend to be pretty fiery. So they do well in an unpredictable kind of practice where they don't know exactly what's coming next. And there's no way to tell whether you're better than someone next to you or whether you nailed it. Because that kind of softer mood will tend to like soften the fire. And then somebody with somebody who is that last dosha, who is more Kapha dosha, they are water and earth. They have strong bodies. They have solid joints. They have a tendency towards being settled. And so a hot, quick moving practice is highly recommended for them. So, and that just kind of comes back to, again, skillful use of the tools that we have in the wide range of practices, because sometimes our tendency will be to aim for a practice that increases what's already out of balance. Mm. So there's definitely a bit of self-knowledge that I think we get better and better at the more we practice.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What if I have some joints that are very delicate and some that are very strong?
Well, then you're a human and you've been walking around in a body for more than 20 years.
Wow, you're human. So I basically can't win yoga is what I just...
Well, there are still some yoga competitions out there.
Yep.
Maybe not during COVID, but
maybe they're virtual. I don't know.
I mean, here's the thing. Yes, you absolutely can win at yoga if the practice that you're doing is quieting your mind and relieving your suffering. Right?
I love it.
Yes.
We should do a dosas. I think I'm hungry.
Dosas.
We should definitely do dosas, guys. A doshas episode.
Yeah.
Or koshas.
You just scratched the surface, man. That stuff's so interesting.
Yeah.
I immediately was like, which one am I? Some of my bones are small, some of them are big. Which practice is right for me, Gia? Oh, no. You say I'm Vata?
Kapha Vata.
Really? I'm not Pitta?
I'd say, yeah.
All right, that's cool.
That's a guess. I don't know.
I've been diagnosed. I've been diagnosed.
Ourselves being diagnosed.
I used to see an Ayurvedic therapist for 2 years. That's so let that be known. She's a very nice lady. Shout out to.
It is now known.
Lisa Coyle.
It is official.
So there's more to be said about all of this, of course.
Totally.
And that was just a little touch on some musings that we thought might be interesting and sort of lighthearted for people to listen to. Some good self-knowledge. It's just interesting, I think, to think about like how you ended up with the practice that you love so much and why and how it changes too. Like it changed for me as I got older.
What
like,
I think is so cool about the practice of yoga is it in of itself is not meant to be ever set in stone in a way that can never, ever change or evolve. And so if I ended up, like, let's say I'm Pitta and I end up in a hot, fiery practice and over time practice this self-knowledge and getting to know myself, then I could make choices that reflect that self-knowledge and end up balancing me out and do what you say, Gia, quiet the mind. And so I can shift the practice that I'm doing to be a different expression of some type of yoga practice. And it's what I've been, as a 30-year-old, that's what I've been finding is that I don't have to keep doing things that aren't working when I find they're not working.
Right. And, you know, you can also keep doing the yoga practice you love, but make maybe adjustments in other areas of your life, knowing that you are going to be doing the hot yoga and you're a fire person, you eat more fresh fruit, or you don't go outside at like 2 p.m. You stay inside to take a nap, or, you know, all those other things, because you they can just get layered on top of one another. And as you said, like, knowing yourself, and if we're looking at it from an Ayurvedic lens, knowing yourself in Ayurvedic terms, then you can make adjustments for the practice you love.
Do you need more flow?
You don't ever have to change
that.
Absolutely. And you know that there's always the 80-20 rule in Ayurveda, you know, which is like 80% of the time you eat for your dosha and 20% of the time you eat for love. And I think that's, I love that you're making that point, Sarah, which is just so true, which is like, the practice you do is the one that works for you, really.
So
if you, if there's one practice that you love, and then you find that you can sample from the other practices to find more balance, then that's a recipe for success for sure.
This has been just a wonderful
learning experience.
We will wrap up here. And one last little tidbit you guys, Gia and Sarah, would like to impart on the listeners / me and Maria / the world. Form and flow, yo.
Well, I would say this. When I was learning from my teacher, Shiva Ray, one of the things that she really emphasized is that there's this underpinning of yoga that says that the nature of life is change. And that we do these practices so that we can respond to the change. And at the same time, the teachings say that at the core of our being is something that's never changing. And so I would say if there's anything that we can take from the flow style of practice is, you know, an unpredictable yoga practice can prepare you for an unpredictable world.
Mic drop.
I like that.
Sarah, pick up the mic.
I would say that that is true. I agree with all of that, of course, that Gia said in such an eloquent way. And I think that the form practice can help you manage the unpredictable world and or respond to it. All right. So as I said, my forward bending practice has been my response to everything feeling really unstable around me. So the real stability and slow moving, very focused alignment of Triang Mukhai Kapada Paschima Tanasana. I just said that so I sounded fancy. is something that I rely on as like my refuge from the very unpredictable world, so that I can contact that within me, which is not changing.
Interesting. Yeah, I love that.
Hashtag paradox.
Hashtag paradox.
We're all about them paradoxes.
Them paradoxes. Right.
Speaking of eloquence, that was so eloquently said.
Yes.
Well, what a treat.
We love you guys. Thank you. I know.
This has been so great. I'm like ready to try out different types of yoga, different types of things, different types of activities, even what I'm listening, what I'm reading. This is exciting.
And I will just say I'm so excited about the big upgrade and teaming up with these two incredible other women. One of the greatest joys of my long so far career of teaching is just getting to be in such great company. So,
and I get to take your teachings. Yeah. The big upgrade happens at Big Power Yoga in Houston.
It is planned to kick off in August.
Yes.
That is the current plan.
Yes.
And we will be responsive to how things shift in the coming months.
BigPowerYoga.com. Click the teacher training tab. That's how you find it. Just check it out. We have people who actually fly in or drive in to Houston in order to do the training. That's how bomb it is. Okay, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for being here again. Thanks, Maria, my co-host.
Thank you, Danon, my co-host.
You're welcome. Patreon.com/BYOBlanket. Review us on iTunes. We love you. And with all that said,
love you guys.
Kisses, blowing kisses. Okay, everyone, say bye.
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 Bye, guys. Thanks for having us.
Bye.
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 Blanket ninjas.
BYO Blanket is a production of The Light Generation.
The BYO Blanket jingle was composed and produced by Studio Sassafras Music in Houston, Texas.
And the vocals are by Jessica Zoller. Thanks for listening.
Blanket Ninjas.